This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
Everybody wants to rule the world, especially the Republicans these days. What a shock, what a surprise, especially as we barrel towards the 2012 elections. And they are willing to do just about anything and everything they can to make sure that they do rule the world beginning next year. Hey, welcome to the Bradcast. I am your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, Brad Friedman, from bradblog.com, Bradcasting, right here on Pacifica Radio's KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 up the Central Coast, and of course, coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org. Glad you could join us. And good to be back. There's been a fundraiser for the last couple of weeks, so I am now back in the chair and delighted about it because there has been a lot going on, a lot specifically in the GOP war on voting. And we talk about that a whole lot over at bradblog.com. We talk about it with some regularity on this show, and we are going to talk about it again today with my guest momentarily, Ari Berman, a political correspondent from The Nation, who today published The GOP War on Voting. That's the name of the article, aptly named, over at rollingstone.com, and it will be in their September 15th issue, which I think is either now or soon on newsstands. Newsstands, remember those? So he's going to be joining us momentarily to discuss what I think is quite an important piece, pulling together so much of what has occurred in this war on voting, the Republican war on voting, on voters, on your legal right to vote. In fact, as quoted in the article, experts now fear, quote, chaos as voters find themselves barred from the polls in 2012. And of course, this, if you want my opinion, is of course the most underreported story to affect the 2012 elections. Our dysfunctional media can't get enough of the horse race, but when it comes to the actual track conditions that the horses will be running on, they don't seem to give much of a damn, whether it's the concerns about electronic voting systems that we have talked about a lot on this show, or about the front-end assault, if you will, on the right to vote at all. As Ari describes in his piece today at Rolling Stone, he sort of puts it into terms the four main fronts to this GOP war on voting, namely barriers to registration, cuts to early voting, photo IDs restrictions, and disenfranchising ex-felons. We'll go through some of that in a minute, but just to give you an idea, he opens the article this way. As the nation gears up for the 2012 presidential election, Republican officials have launched an unprecedented, centrally coordinated campaign to suppress the elements of the Democratic vote that elected Barack Obama in 2008. Just as Dixiecrats in the South once used poll taxes and literacy tests to bar black Southerners from voting, a new crop of GOP governors and state legislators has passed a series of seemingly disconnected measures that could prevent millions of students, minorities, immigrants, ex-convicts, and the elderly from casting ballots. Says Judith Brown Dionis, who monitors voting as the co-director of the Advancement Project, as she says in Ari Berman's article today. Quote, what has happened this year is the most significant setback to voting rights in this country in a century. Got your attention yet? I'm hoping so. As Ari also quotes in the article, this tactic is not new, but it has been going on for a while in the Republican Party, the modern Republican Party. And many of these bills that are now being passed across the country emanate from the American Legislative Exchange Council, otherwise known as ALEC, founded by a guy named Paul Weyrich, who we have played before on this show. A GOP demigod, frankly. He founded ALEC. They have been creating these photo ID restriction bills and so forth. Here is Paul Weyrich in 1980 laying out the Rosetta Stone, frankly, for the modern-day GOP voter disenfranchise movement. This is him in 1980 speaking at a convention in Dallas to thousands of Baptist preachers back then. Here's what he had to say about voting rights.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Our leverage in election goes up as the voting populace goes down. Get it? That's the plan. It has nothing to do with quote-unquote voter fraud, as you'll hear these clowns on the right trying to tell you. But let's get this straight from Ari Berman. He joins us now. As I said, he's a political correspondent at The Nation and the author of The GOP War on Voting, which you can and should read today at rollingstone.com. Hey, Ari, welcome back, sir, to KPFK.
Hey, Brad, thanks for having me, and thanks for all your work on this issue over the years.
You're very kind to say that. You did a hell of a job with this piece, really, and some of it I have covered it at Brad Blog, but you have done The Nation a great favor, frankly, by pulling all of these things together, and it's an extraordinary case. Let's go through some of the key states here where they have made major changes to voting laws that are going to affect the 2012 election. Where would you like to start, Ari?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing for people to know is that this is going on, because if they don't read your blog regularly, which obviously they should, or they don't read thenation.com regularly or places like that, people might not even know this has actually happened. That since the 2010 election, in very much a stealth effort, 38 states have introduced legislation that would make it more difficult for people to vote, primarily Democratic and Obama-leaning voters to vote. And 12 states, a dozen states, have actually approved these obstacles to voting. So just to run through them real quick, Kansas and Alabama now require proof of citizenship to actually register to vote. Florida and Texas are two of the states that have made it harder for groups like the League of Women Voters to register new voters. Maine repealed Election Day voter registration, which had been on the books since 1973. That five states cut short their early voting periods, including crucial swing states like Florida and Ohio. And then you had six states controlled by Republican governors and legislatures, and these are the big ones. Alabama, Kansas, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin requiring state or government-issued IDs for people to cast their ballots. And people think, well, everyone has ID. If you drive, you have an ID. That's actually not true. According to a study by the Brennan Center, which I know you've quoted before, the 10% of U.S. citizens, lack such ID, and the numbers are significantly higher, 18% among young people and 25% among African Americans. So we're talking about a bunch of different states, red states and blue states, enacting these laws that could affect millions of voters, and most people don't even know that it's been going on.
No, they don't. And, I want to get back to some of the specifics here, but it's sort of, you sort of jump ahead to one thing that I want to make sure to ask, which is that most people don't even know this is going on. The media, around the clock, cable news, just around the clock, they're all over the horse race. Why do you suppose it is, Ari Berman, that the media does not seem to pay attention to the track conditions, which arguably could have as great effect on next year's election as virtually anything else? How do we explain this?
I think there's two reasons. I mean, number one, the reason is because it's early and people haven't started paying attention quite yet to the 2010 election in a practical sense. But number two, just because a lot of the media is lazy, is focused on the horse race, and this is complicated information to process. I know just during the fact-checking of this piece, it was very difficult to try to unpack all these different laws, mm-hmm. what they mean, what they require, and Republicans until recently had been very good at pushing this stuff through very quickly through emergency measures and things like that, and before people could even turn around, these things were actually law. And so what we tried to do is do this early to show that this is out there. It's not a series of disconnected measures. It's part of a central campaign. This was a top priority for the GOP in the 2010 election and after the 2010 election, even if they didn't talk about it. And really, what this is not really, to me, it's not about whether Obama wins or whether Rick Perry or Mitt Romney wins. This is about the fundamental democratic process, which is that you are supposed to have your vote counted in election day. And if you don't have that right, if that right is not there for certain segments of the population, mm-hmm. then our elections are meaningless no matter who wins. And that's the larger point I was trying to make with this article.
Well, and that is exactly the point. That's exactly one of the reasons I covered this issue. I say it over and over again. These are not issues of right and left. These are issues of right and wrong. And if you're going to argue and spend billions, if not trillions, around the world trying to spread democracy around the world and then assault it the way the Republicans seem to be willing to do right now in this country, then ultimately you don't have a democracy. And, I talk a lot about electronic voting systems. We had recently a Mississippi election clerk who got approval to remove these so-called paper trail printers from these 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting machines. And as reported, he said the voting machines record every vote and there is no way for them to be tampered with. No way for the, now they happen to use these Diebold touchscreens out there, which we have seen hacked time and time again by, Princeton and the state of California, state of Ohio, and so forth. So these things, like the GOP war on voting, seem to escape the interest of the media until it is too late, until just before the election. So I thank you for doing it right now, do it early enough so that something can be done if somebody wants to. Is anything, before we get into the specifics, is anything being done? Do you see an effort by Democrats to counter these efforts, or is it being left up to the advocates, the League of Women Voters and ACLU and so forth?
Sure. Well, I think there's a variety of different steps that people are taking. I mean, the reason it's called the GOP war on voting is not to excuse the Democrats, but it's one party that's leading this stuff. I mean, when Democrats were in power, they weren't spending all their time disenfranchising Republican voters, because the theory, I think, underlying the Democratic Party much more than the Republican Party is that the higher the turnout, the better for Democrats. And Paul Weyrich, as you said, had quite the opposite approach, which is the lower the turnout, the better for Republicans. So I just want to make that clear. It's not excusing the Democratic Party. It's just saying this is much more in the DNA of Republicans, and they're the ones leading this effort. Right now, in terms of what different groups are doing, based on my inbox today, Democrats are very aware of this problem, and I think you're going to see a lot more organizing from the Obama campaign and from Democratic campaigns in terms of just voter identification to help people get these IDs. In terms of challenging the laws, there's a bunch of different stuff that's going on. I mean, groups are pressing the Justice Department, which has authority under the Voting Rights Act, to look at these southern states that are covered under the Voting Rights Act, and they have to pre-clear, it's what it's called, pre-clear these changes, and they're urging the Justice Department not to pre-clear these changes. Now, I should say the Justice Department, up until recently, has not been that aggressive, and Congressman John Lewis, who obviously has a long career in the civil rights movement, he said to me in my piece that he'd like to see the Justice Department be a lot more aggressive, and I think most of the voting rights advocates agree with that too. Mm-hmm. There is a problem, as you've mentioned, of this Supreme Court decision which upheld Indiana's photo ID law in 2008, and the theory here, though, is that some of these laws that have passed, and this may be too technical for most people listening, but that some of these states, such as Texas and Wisconsin, have gone even further than what the Supreme Court approved. And so you could see legal challenges this year, for sure, although we're in a current environment where I don't think this Supreme Court's going to be too receptive to that.
They will not be receptive to challenges to these laws, you're saying?
I don't know. I mean, we don't know. It's just, I'm just saying that this is the Supreme Court that's consistently ruled with conservatives on issue after issue after issue. So I could see them once again ruling with conservatives here. But there's a bunch of different ways to do this. I mean, one is to help voters get the identification. Another thing is to try to soften these laws that are already on the books and work with existing regulators to make them easier. A third thing is just to educate people to try to get the ID if they don't have them. Now, in some of these states, you've created a situation where even if students want or people want to get the ID, they can't. So, for example, like in Wisconsin, a student ID, for example, is one of the IDs that is currently ineligible under the law. So they've written the law in such a way that 242,000 students in Wisconsin don't have that documentation. Now, basically, it's up to the University of Wisconsin schools to decide whether they can afford to print new IDs.
They have to change. They have to change their IDs to meet the restrictions that there must be a signature, a photo, a 2-year limitation. All of these things. That burden is going to fall on the universities themselves.
It's going to fall the universities. It's not in the budget for the law, and it's going to fall the universities at a time when Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin has significantly cut. funding for education. So these schools are scaling back already. He cut $250 million from the University of Wisconsin system, and now they have to say to themselves, okay, where are we going to find the $1.6 million that it's going to cost to print all these new IDs? Are we going to have them in time? This is the kind of stuff that if it happened in 1963 and it was among black people in South Carolina, we would say this is a poll tax.
Right? Exactly. Absolutely. In the past, the Supreme Court has turned down $1.50 poll tax on that basis. We've got a different court now. You had referenced Ari Berman, proof of citizenship as needed in some states. What serves as proof of citizenship to be able to vote? Actually, to first get your ID, your photo ID, and then use that photo ID to vote. What would serve as proof of citizenship?
Well, that's the thing. You'd have to have a birth certificate or something of that nature to actually prove that you were born here. And the problem is a lot of the same people, Kansas also passed the photo ID law. And so a lot of those people that lack a photo ID are also going to lack proof of citizenship, right? And they're going to have a hard time being able to find it. I mean, I just had to get a birth certificate recently. And it was a relatively difficult process for me to get one. Mm-hmm. And I'm a well-educated journalist. So, I mean, you can imagine the difficulty that a low-information, low-income voter would have trying to navigate these requirements. And I think that's quite frankly the purpose of these laws, is to just make it so complicated that people who are on the edge of voting just say, okay, I give up. I'm not going to vote.
Yep.
And it's really hard to quantify how many people that will be come Election Day.
Not to mention the fact that, to come up with your birth certificate or your passport in order to get your photo ID. If you don't already have those things, you're going to have to pay money to get your passport or to get your birth certificate. Actually, I think you might need your birth certificate to get your passport or vice versa. So you're going to have to pay money. And the thing that people, I think, need to remember when it comes to rights like this, it's not a matter of how many people have lost their rights. When one person loses their right because of a law like this, at least in the old days when we had a legitimate Supreme Court, these sorts of laws would be found unconstitutional. And we have, Ari, I don't know if you saw a voter up in Wisconsin who went with her son to try to get a photo ID up there. And she took a video of the hoops she had to jump through, including showing a bank statement to prove that he had residency in Wisconsin. And they actually rifled through his bank statement and at one point say, well, sorry, there's not enough activity in your bank statement to buy this.
I did see that. I did see that, and it was interesting. I didn't have space to mention it in the piece, but I saw that, and I mentioned it to Wendy Weiser, who is head of the democracy program at the Brennan Center for Justice, which does a lot of great work on this issue. And I asked her about the bank statement, and I'm like, is there anything in the law that authorizes the DMV to do that? And she said no. So you could get a situation where DMV people, some of whom are not the most confident to begin with, everyone knows what it's like to go to the DMV, they're now getting an incredible amount of leeway, an incredible amount of power. And the law aside, we don't know how that's going to be executed. We don't know if they're going to execute that in any sort of acceptable manner, any sort of standardized manner, or they're going to do things like in Wisconsin that are just completely not in the law and create additional burdens additional barriers. And one of the things that the Supreme Court said in Wisconsin, and sorry, in Indiana, and the reason they upheld the photo ID law in Indiana, which became the draft mock legislation for all the other states, mm-hmm. is that 99% of people in Indiana and voters had that ID already, and they had access to full-time DMVs in every county. A lot of states don't have that. For example, in Wisconsin, go back to Wisconsin, mm-hmm. I mean, half of all Black and Hispanic residents in Wisconsin don't have that ID, and the state has half as many DMVs as Indiana, a quarter of which are open less than one day a month. And Scott Walker then tried to shut down more DMVs in Democratic-leaning areas. There was enough pushback that that didn't happen.
Right.
Which just goes to show you that I think this is ripe for a Supreme Court challenge, because what's happening here goes far beyond, I think, what the court has already approved.
It's more than ripe for a Supreme Court challenge. I'm concerned what happens when it does go to this particular Supreme Court. As a matter of fact, this week, the Department of Justice voting unit, which is restoring itself to some legitimacy after 8 years of being anything but an anti-voting unit, frankly, under Bush, they sent a letter to South Carolina sending some questions about South Carolina's new polling place photo ID restrictions. And it's clear, it seems to me from the letter, I don't know if you read it, but it seems to me they have very serious concerns about what is being set up for voters to allow them to get their so-called free IDs. It seems that South Carolina has not thought it through. In response, the AG, the Attorney General, a Republican of South Carolina, has recently said he's going to challenge this. If the DOJ turns them down, turns down this law for preclearance, he's going all the way to the Supreme Court. And yeah. I think they know they have friends at the Supreme Court. But Ari, give me an idea. What the right wingers are using is this notion of voter fraud. They're doing this to prevent voter fraud. They have a compelling argument. Oh, you need an ID to buy a beer, which, by the way, you don't. You need an ID to get on a photo ID to get on a plane, which, by the way, you don't. To open a bank account, which, by the way, you don't. But they like to say these things. It seems reasonable. People should identify themselves when they go and vote. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, what's wrong with that argument is a few things. I mean, number one, a lot more people lack the IDs than people realize. Number two, buying beer and getting on a plane isn't a constitutional right. And number three, there actually is no such thing in any real terms as voter fraud. I mean, voter fraud is so rare that Brennan Center, again, had a study that said you're more likely to get struck by lightning than you are to impersonate another voter, which is really what these laws are trying to crack down on. And so they've created this boogeyman, this phantom menace, to justify a predetermined agenda. And that agenda is that every time Democrats win elections, Republicans are convinced that they were stolen. They were either stolen by ex-cons, or they were stolen by Acorn. Or they were stolen by illegal immigrants. And they've worked. I think at this point, some of them just use it as an excuse, and some of them actually believe what they're reading from John Fund of the Wall Street Journal and getting from groups like ALEC, and they actually believe this stuff.
Oh, I think they definitely believe it because it's been repeated over and over and over again. It's extraordinary propaganda. But as you write at Rolling Stone, a major probe by the Justice Department between 2002 and 2007, that's under George W. Bush, failed to prosecute a single person for going to the polls and impersonating an eligible voter, which the anti-fraud laws are supposedly designed to stop. Where there is voter fraud, election fraud is one thing, folks, insiders manipulating machines and so forth, but voter fraud, where there is voter fraud, it doesn't take place at a polling place. It takes place by absentee ballot.
Yeah.
We do find some there, and these photo ID restrictions at the polling place have nothing to do with absentee balloting.
Well, and that's a really good point, and that's something that I wasn't able to mention in my piece. But the reason that has not been cracked down on is because absentee voters, particularly in the military and particularly among elderly voters, tend to favor Republicans. So, for example, Rick Scott in Florida, one of the states that cut down on early voting and made it harder to register to vote, he lost among early voters, but he won significantly among absentee voters. And so that's one of the reasons why absentee voters, which is, as you say, the most likely for fraud, because no one's watching you. I mean, you can do it in the privacy of your own home as opposed to actually showing up and having to be checked on the voter roll.
Mm-hmm.
that's completely slipped through the cracks. And so that's why I don't think that this is actually about voter fraud. It never has been. And you'd be hard-pressed, I think, to find a more draconian solution to a non-existent problem. I mean, how much trouble are Republicans creating? How much money are they spending? How much difficulty are they going to pose for people for really a problem that doesn't exist?
As much as they need to, Ari Berman. Otherwise, they would be going after guys like Mitt Romney, Governor John Huntsman, who have been alleged to have committed voter fraud by voting from a residence they didn't actually live in. Current Republican Indiana Secretary of State Charlie White himself is now facing three voter fraud-related felonies. And, of course, the GOP voter fraud queen of them all, Ann Coulter. You can read about her, bradblog.com/coulterfraud. She commits voter fraud in reality over and over again. We have the documents to prove it. But please read the documents to prove it over at rollingstone.com in Ari Berman's great, really important new piece at rollingstone.com. Ari, really appreciate your work here, my friend.
Hey, Brad, thanks for having me. I appreciate your work, too.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. All right. Well, we will be back next week with another fresh Bradcast. Same Brad channel, same Brad time. Glad you could join us this week. We'll have the archives up later today at bradblog.com and kpfk.org. You can tweet me at The Brad Blog. My thanks today, of course, to Desi Doyen, our producer, our engineer, G, and, of course, as always, to Alan Minsky. We'll see you next week. Until then, you can find us at bradblog.com. Good night, America.